This is the Funny Mummies podcast, the podcast for people that hate parenting podcasts. I'm Hattie Ashdown, comedian, writer, actress and mother to two very lively boys. Each show, I'm joined by funny mummies from the world of comedy, arts and anyone who can help us in this crazy world of parenting. So settle in as we find the funny side of parenting and being bloody great women. Okay, hello and welcome to another Funny Mummies. I'm Hattie Ashdown. How are you? I hope everyone's doing all right for this special show. I was going to say, actually, on the way here, it's literally running upstairs to the spare bedroom, is I was thinking, right, I need to put a sanitary towel on today, a tenor lady on today, because I think it's going to be funny. But then I also thought, my pelvic floor has been improved because I've been doing a bit of the old yogi. I know, get me. Who do I think I am? Joining me to keep me in check so I don't get above myself. Of course, she's live from sunny Southampton. It's Gemma Beagley, of course.
I know, on location.
I know, it's so glamorous. You're right, though, lovely. Let's just crack on. Yep. We've been on again, so then we can all, otherwise we'll get chatting. It is writer, journalist, podcaster, author of Motherwhelmed, More Orgasms, Please, How to Be a Boss at Aging, and her fiction, Hang On. It's the very funny mum of two, Anarchy Somerville.
Oh, that was lovely. That was. Have you seen how? Yeah, that was a really nice intro, because I think my fiction books, nobody usually mentions those, and then sometimes I try and bring them up in the conversation and they're not so subtle.
You don't think like,
Yeah, so anyway, so when I was writing my fiction book, because I'm kind of like trying to give a little plug in there. So,
and this is your first fiction book, is that right? Yeah.
Well, no, I did Motherwhelmed was a fiction book, and then I did this other book, Hang On, and that's only come out sort of quite recently. But yeah, so I found myself, I didn't become a writer overnight. I was writing for a long time, but it's just that timings wise, things sort of all came out at a similar period of time. So
I see, because obviously, like, I wanted to get you on to talk about How to Be a Boss at Aging, because I've been an Instagram fan of yours for a while, and I know it might sound naff to some people, but your stories are so funny, and it's not naff to mums that, like, I don't know, laying in bed, breastfeeding or whatever they're doing, scrolling. I'm sure your stories keep them going because they're very funny. And then this book came out and I was like, oh my God, this is just perfect, because I'm a very reluctant 40-something-year-old and I need to embrace it. So, but that's not your most recent book. So now, you just books come
well, no,
out.
That book's probably, in terms of writing it, because I wrote it last year. So I think that I was one of those irritating people that in lockdown started a podcast and wrote a book.
Because you've done a course. You've been doing an online course for writing. This is not what I was going to talk about, but you just made me think about writing a book. And I thought, oh, I might do that. And
well,
how's that
funny.
Gone?
I announced that. That's what you call on Instagram smoke and mirrors. So you
right.
Say, I'm going to announce a course. I'm going to announce a course. And then you say, I've got the course. And then a little bit of tumbleweed just blows along and nothing happens at all. And so at the moment, I've sort of slightly shifted focus, because I started working part time and I kind of realised I was doing too much. I was burnt out, basically. So I'm just doing one-on-one coaching on the writing, because the thing is that doing a big group of people, I wrote a whole course on how to do nonfiction in particular, and that could be a full-time job, to be honest, just looking through people's work and commenting on it. And
So
I'm doing one lovely student at the moment, and she's almost like my guinea pig, and we're seeing how it goes. And that's working out really well. I found that loads of people want to write nonfiction in particular, because I think they sort of have a feeling that they might be an expert in something. And I suppose there's this whole new genre that's emerged, which is very much based around personal experience. It's like, you don't need to be a doctor necessarily, but
right.
If you've gone through something that's interesting, you can use that to write a nonfiction piece, which can hopefully help other people who are going through something similar.
Okay, that's interesting. We're all experts. Yeah, people just, we're all nosy, aren't we? This is why we love autobiographies as well. Well, I do.
You're listening to the Funny Mummies podcast,
for the Other Woman Show on Soho Radio.
I think, let's tell you what we normally do at the beginning is we do a little quick fire round to get to know.
Okay.
Nice way of getting to know you. But I thought a little while ago you wrote such a lovely, funny little intro. You know, like on Instagram, they ask you every now and again, it's expected that we should sort of go, oh, by the way, in case you're a new follower. And you did a while ago, and I just thought it was so funny, and I just thought I'd read some of that out, unless you can remember some of it.
Yeah, no, that's good.
I am a writer. I have a podcast. I'm just gonna do some of the highlights. I've had 7 rounds of fertility treatment and have 2 kids. I'm a size 16 and sometimes 14. I get very angry at least once a week. I cry every other day. I sometimes throw toys in the bin because they get on my nerves. I so do that. I've lost 3 people to traumatic circumstances. I feel anxious 2-3 times a week. I used to shoplift. I was in a house ban in Amsterdam and had a couple of hits. I'm not going to be able to pronounce the name of your band. My first boyfriend was the keyboard player in a band called, what is it? Clan of
Zymox.
Oh, I do recognise that. I have very dry hair, me too. I prefer cats to dogs. I was vegetarian for years, but now eat meat sometimes. I also like to do impressions of Dolly Parton. We are going to have to ask for that. I used to be obsessed with Michael Hutchins. I wish I had a bigger house, and in particular a study or a spare room. I wake up early every year and will eventually just stop sleeping. And this one, which I relate to, I have an irritating habit of wanting people to like me, even if I hate them, but I'm working on it.
Yeah, that's one of the worst
things.
I know, that is actually one of the things which I've been writing about. I'm working on this book at the moment about work and kind of what kind of personality we have at work. And I kind of had this epiphany quite recently that I probably wouldn't have got myself into so many difficult situations and put myself through so much stress if I hadn't really wanted to be liked all the time. And I think that's something that women in particular, we just suffer so badly with this. And even coming away from quite small social interactions, I tend to sort of analyze them and think, was she looking at me strangely because of a comment that I made? Or are they secretly all meeting up for a drink and they haven't invited me? And there's kind of all this underlying insecurity. And I am getting better. I mean, that's one of the things I feel with aging is that at some point you just get tired of having those thoughts going round and round your head. And I just sometimes have to almost like put an elastic band on my wrist and snap it and just say, stop, you know, just stop. Because the problem is you can never have everybody liking you unless you're really pretty mild and insipid and you never ever say what you think or you never challenge anyone. So, yeah, I'm trying to work on that. I think we all are, aren't we?
Yeah, and I guess that also brings us to your book, to How to Be a Boss at Aging, is that one of the overall things I got from that was that everything's work in progress. And just to keep trying, and even if you're not doing that well or whatever, just try again tomorrow. And
arrive. You never, I mean, that's the thing, is that I sort of, if you'd asked me, I mean, I'm in my late 40s now, if you'd said to me, I would have thought that by now I would have everything sorted in terms of, you know, there'd be some tranquility, some calm, some order. And actually what I found in my 40s, probably because I had kids quite late, was that suddenly it became almost like I just slipped on this banana skin, which went on for 8 years, you know, and it was just, I was constantly tired and juggling and worrying and everything. And I think when I look back on this time, I'll probably think, God, that was remarkable that you managed to get through it all. And actually, I mean, what my mum keeps saying, she always says to me, oh, you'll look back on it and you'll think how much you enjoyed it. And I think that's actually bollocks. It's kind of
because we can always look back with rose-tinted glasses a little. Just picks out the highlights. I forget,
being about 24 and my mate, before I got sober, and my mate and I were sitting there, I don't know, sort of 4 o'clock in the morning, drinking, and we were both saying, if we can just get to 30, like 30 was going to be this kind of boundary that you cross where it's just like 30, your 20s are over. And I got sober at 25 here I am at 40 going, oh, forget it 30, and also forget it 40. It's just like there isn't this kind of that thing of like, oh, things, what I will know myself and all that. And I'm It's that thing of like just trying to enjoy the journey, which, by the way, I do not nail on a daily basis, but just that kind of, you know what? And I don't know, I haven't got to the bit in your book yet, Anarchy, about the next half, right? You know, the next 40 years. Mm. But just that kind of, I've got like, shit, I've only got 40 years to go, you know? And so I'm just trying to, I want to be able to enjoy the second 40 more than I did the first 40.
It's funny. I was just saying that, it's weird because I remember my gran saying to me that, you know, she said, when you're aging, because she was in her 90s when she died, but she was like, I look in the mirror each day and she said, I see this old woman staring back at me, but inside I sort of feel like exactly the same person, you know. She said, I haven't really changed. And I thought, that's just rubbish. That cannot be true. And she was saying that to me when I was probably in my 20s. And then I realized that it is kind of true. So you age, but you're kind of the same inside. You haven't changed that radically. I think the only thing that happens is that in your 40s, unfortunately, through a mixture of maybe things going wrong, maybe losing people, maybe being in a lot of challenges, maybe facing up to perimenopause and loads of other things, you really do start to think, do you know what? I can't care about all of the things that I'm caring about and continue, you know, like I have to actually shift some energy somewhere. And also, I think what I've felt really, you know, sad about actually was I realized that for so much of my life I'd been unhappy and had just thought that was quite normal, you know. I sort of thought, oh, that's quite, you know, everyone must be like that. And then I think now I've got to the point where I'm like, no, I don't have the expectation that I'm going to be happy every day, but I want to feel like I'm headed somewhere and I want to have things to look forward to. And I think that's actually tricky when you age, because most of the things that we see around us are very fixated on being young. You know, it's kind of, you watch Love Island, you don't see like a 48-year-old woman coming
in.
No, you know,
I mean, and this you know, is what they need.
Yeah, if you did, I'd love to watch Love Island with people in their late 40s.
Well, because it's the men. The women are fine. I just don't know if I could bear to watch the 48-year-old men, you know.
That's true.
I mean, I think this is a good that is a good TV concept, but it's just kind of the notion that if you're in your late 40s, you're kind of like, you're thinking, what are you really saying to me? That the only thing I can do is feel nostalgic about the past, because everything that I'm seeing on the TV is kind of just showing me young, fit, perfect images. I mean, it is changing. It's changing.
Yeah, I mean, how do you think it's changing? Because that was one of the things at the beginning of your book that I was like, oh my God, yes, it's so true. And I subconsciously had noticed it and got a bit fed up, that the whole thing of like, okay, so, you know, for me now, getting into my 40s, Gemma still doesn't really know how old I am. I'm a bit of a Barbara Windsor. I don't tell people. So I'm quite in there. That I sort of go, well, where are my role models? And you say at the beginning of your book about like, well, it feels a bit like there's just such a breath of like, oh, Helen Mirren and
Judi Dench,
and then there's no one in between. I mean, now I would say, but I wonder what young people say, because now I'm like, well, I look up to like Claudia Winkleman or Tess Daly and Zoe Ball.
There are more. There are more now, I think.
But and if you ask a young person, would they think they are an old woman? I wonder that just came to me then, because like younger people.
And I think one of the things that's still, it's changing a little bit, but like I used to love reading magazines and I sort of grew up reading magazines. I suppose people don't really buy many magazines anymore, but I quite liked reading profiles of actresses and things, even nowadays, I sort of notice the fact that if they are in their late 40s or early 50s, I don't know, it doesn't feel like there's much attention paid to the kind of challenges of being older. So it's kind of skirted over the top. So it's kind of, you know, we walked in and she looked radiant and, you know, her skin was glowing, and they don't actually say because she's just had Botox and, you know, she's had total laser resurfacing and a hair transplant. You know, they don't say that. And, you know, she's got completely new teeth. And I mean, it's funny because I interviewed Sally Hughes, who's a beauty journalist for the book, and she was actually, she called me out because she said, listen, you know, women don't need to talk about it. Why do women have to talk about these things? Why do we have to expose women and say, she's not being honest because she's having her picture taken and, you know, that's not her natural, whatever that means, natural face or whatever. And I said, no, I mean, I suppose that is true. That is kind of true. But I guess all I would like to see is I'd just like to see a bit more authenticity. So people sort of say, do you know what, as an actress, I find it really hard because I have to have my, you know, face photographed all the time. And so, yeah, I do get Botox. And actually it does, you know, I have this device, you know, mask that I put on my face at night and a big sunbeam and a laser comes down. And it costs thousands of pounds. And because I just feel that there's a lot of women who are kind of aspiring to something. And I mean, it's even worse for younger women, but sort of aspiring to an ideal that isn't really attainable, you know. And I have had Botox, and I kind of feel like I probably haven't got to the point where I literally would put it on my Instagram. But I have said it, actually. I've said it in the book that I went, you know, I describe going and having it done. And what I think is a bit daft is that we have certain things that we put in a natural camp, and certain things which we put in a not natural camp. But actually, when you think about most of the things you do for beauty's sake, they can't really be deemed as natural, because if, you know, dyeing your hair, or, you know, I have hairs that now grow out of my chin because of...
Oh,
you know,
same.
So if I really was going to be a natural beauty, which seems to be the thing that's really held up to be the ideal, you know, I would have, you know, a big... you know, grey hair to here, which is fine, but, you know, the rest would be blonde. And then I'd have a big beard, which would be white, which would probably sort of be tufty and down here. If I was really natural, I wouldn't ever use a whitening toothpaste and my teeth would be all yellow, you know. And it's kind of like, what does it actually mean? You know, what does it... And I just, like, I think it's good to have conversations about it and just go, do you know what? Maybe it's not such a big deal. And maybe if we just get it out into the open a bit more, we can. And the other problem is that if we all don't talk about it, I think a lot of women can go to really crappy places and get it done.
Yes.
And because they're kind of ashamed or they're not well informed about it. And that could end up being an issue, you know, that they kind of go into some...
Don't they have like Botox parties and things like that, which almost make it more acceptable, because it's like going for a Tupperware party, you know? So it's no different. Or Anne Summers back in the day. So, but that worries me, because I think, oh God, you know, it's not...
No, I mean, I think it's like I got two massive tattoos done when I hit 40. And now when I look back on it, I think, shit, you know, so it's obviously something going on with me. Not that I have anything against tattoos, but, you know, they were really large and I can't get rid of them now. And I think I feel the same about Botox. Is don't do it when you're going through a sort of midlife crisis. So if you sort of find that you want to buy a Harley Davidson and run off with Matt Hancock, then it's probably not a good time to, it's probably not a good time to get any cosmeceuticals. You need to be, I think you always need to sign a disclaimer saying, I am of sound mind. You know, I feel fairly steady in myself. You know, I haven't cried every day this week and I'm not drunk, you know, because I think that's when it could go. I mean, a party is just such a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because I could just imagine you sort of going, oh, do you know what, actually, while you're there, can you do this as well?
Because it makes it seem not so official. The whole thing of, you know, going to a doctor's and everything, it's a bit, but which is what you need, because you want to be getting done properly. I was thinking about, oh God, so many things I've written on my notes. I feel like I'm in a hurry, like opposite to stuff you've been saying, and I think Gemma's saying as well. And that's the thing that I need to work on, is that, in case anyone else feels like this, that I feel like, oh, I'm in my 40s. I should be feeling like a bit calmer and like, and, but I actually, the opposite, I feel like a bit in a hurry to get these things done, And that's what I need to sort of work on, because it's suddenly realizing your life is galloping up. And the trouble is, because I've had two kids late as well, it's like, oh, but I haven't, how do I fit it with? So I, you know, that's again another work in progress of me just, what is it? I don't know why I'm saying this, Aniki, like I'm asking you, like you're...
No, but I think it's
tell me the answer.
No, but it's a real frustration, because I think, you know, you really desperately want to have kids at the time, perhaps when you're also feeling like you really want to dedicate time to your work. You know, like I only became a writer really in my 40s, which was exactly the time when I had my first child. And part of that has helped. Like part of that helps because I do feel like you get more done when you've got limited amounts of time. You don't have to have a child necessarily. Some people might be looking after an elderly relative, or they might have other things that they're trying to do. And I think there's something about, you know, I've only got an hour, so I'm going to do it now, and you get your head down. But I know what you mean. I mean, I feel like I'm in denial sometimes about my age, because I sort of think, oh, I've got loads of time to do everything that I want to do. And in reality, there isn't that much time, you know. And I do worry a little bit because my youngest, her one of the first things she learned, phrases, she's only 2.5, but she'll say, in 5 minutes. She says, in five minutes. And it's because every time she comes in the door or comes downstairs, I'm usually on my laptop or my phone or on a call or something, and I'll go, in 5 minutes. And so that made me quite sad. But then I also thought, you know what? I hope that when she's older, she'll go, do you know what? My mum hit her 40s and suddenly started writing books, and she was doing a podcast. And she was really trying to nail it. And, you know, I hope she finds that a positive thing rather than being like, oh, you know what? She was always telling me to piss off all the time.
I was gasping because my 2.5-year-old is going to be 3 next week. It does exactly the same.
I know.
But it's more. I think it's more because I'm always saying 5 more minutes watching TV. So he's got a thing about 5 minutes, 5 minutes. But did your mum?
The reflection back to you is pretty. One was when he was he'd kind of do this growling thing like out of frustration. I'm like, that's me, that I make that noise, and it's like, oh,
you growl.
He's a growler.
I do this terrible thing where I do, which is what my own mum did, bless her. But I do this thing where I go, I'm very calm, and then suddenly, without warning, I go, right, that's it, absolutely. And I literally go into stratospheric rage, and I'm like, there's no more television, there's no more iPads. I have absolutely, you know, and I go into this sort of tirade of anger. And what's worrying is that my 7-year-old now does this to the 2.5-year-old. So she'll suddenly go, that's it, I've absolutely had enough, that's the end of the line, you're gonna have no more. And I'm kind of like, oh my god, because I think I'm quite confusing as a mother, because I'm generally very calm, but then without any warning, so I don't really do that,
no build up,
I just suddenly explode. And I explode so much that both of the children stare with their eyes just on stalks, and they're kind of, they sometimes laugh, I think, because it's actually so over the top, the anger.
I can't imagine you, Anna, you always seem so calm, and I can't, because I do that. I'm exactly, and the funny thing is, because we've had lots of trouble with my oldest, he's going to be 6 in a month, and one of the things especially said was, they was talking about triggers for him to sort of like just go off on one. And I was saying, well, the thing is, I said, that it's like he goes from 0 to 10. There's no midway. I'm now thinking, basically, this is just me. Yeah, I can't imagine. Did your mum have you, I want to use a better phrase than saying the normal age, it feels like.
Yeah, no, she was in her 20s, but she then went on to have 2 more children later on. So she had children then in her late 30s and early 40s. So she did the worst thing imaginable, because she kind of ended up just when one child was almost about to leave the nest, started then having more children. So I think that anger thing is an interesting one, because I think I was probably always angry, but motherhood just, it was almost like it was kind of a, you know, someone had lit a fuse. And I can honestly say I've never been so angry in early sort of days of motherhood, where I was just raging. You know, I would take things like my partner's socks or clothing and throw it out of the side window, just straight into the bin. I would take, like, if a piece of toast came out the toaster and it was just slightly burnt, I would just throw it across the kitchen. I did a lot, like I set fire to a packed lunch bag once, like by accident. I basically put it next to the hob and it caught fire. But then I took the whole thing and then threw it in the garden and actually sort of stamped up and down on it, quite kind of like Basil Fawlty, you know, when he's beating his car with the sticks. But it was almost like, it was quite frightening. I was really quite frightened about the level of anger. I didn't direct it. I tried not to. I'd like to say that I didn't shout at them, but I did. I've got slightly better, and that's mainly just because I listened to the kind of mindfulness relaxation, you know. So I might listen to Tara Brach, who's like this sort of mindfulness expert, or I listen to the Clementine app, or I try not to let it get to the level, because once you're getting to the point where you're throwing things and really screaming and shouting, I have to remember that that is actually quite scary for a kid to see. Unless to be honest, they quite often laugh because they just seem to think that it's quite comical.
That anger thing is interesting, because I had an angry mum growing up, I'm very quick to temper. That's what I say, and I made a conscious decision for myself that I would never ever raise a hand to my children. I was just like, right, because I know my temper, and it was just so, it was absolutely there, and this is absolutely no judgment on somebody else who does. And I'm pleased to say that I've never done it because I don't want to scare my kid. And but that's because of me, and because I find it uncontrollable sometimes. So it's just an absolute bottom line for me.
But it's funny, because I think sometimes, like with me, because I've never sort of smacked them, but I sort of feel like sometimes shouting is just as bad, isn't it? You know, in terms of scariness.
Yeah, yeah. And I can go the other way as well. Around that kind of punishing silence bit as well, you know, just kind of ignoring that, you know. Jo Frost is quite big into that, isn't she, on Super Nanny, and actually the guilt that I could feel after that, where it's just like, God, that's really chilling, just like really kind of like, oh God, you know.
You're listening to the Funny Mummies podcast in association with Screaming with Laughter, the lunchtime comedy club where babies can come too.
I consider myself, you know, I used to DJ, I used to work in record shops, and I always thought like I was quite a cool person with music, like liking not a lot of the chart stuff ever really, but always keeping up with like this new band who's just, I don't know, come out in Brooklyn, and they're this indie band or whatever. And then you get to a point where you're like, oh, for me, it was sort of going into comedy. I sort of had to make a choice, because being really into music, it was actually quite full time to be on top of things. So I lost contact with that. But then I found myself now just listening to old stuff, as people do. Mm. I think a lot of people do. And I'm saying, in my mind, the narrative in my mind is, well, I don't like anything new now, you know, even like some new indie band that might come in. I'm like, but it's not like, you know, my day sort of thing. But in your book, I was like, she's so right. I don't want to be that mum. I don't want to be that mum that is like, oh, it's not like my music. So I'm now trying to make a conscious effort to.
It's really hard though, because I think sometimes you have this visceral response to music. Well, I do. And I know that, I mean, when I grew up, we had loads of like Joni Mitchell and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Bob Dylan and stuff. And I did listen a lot to my parents' music, you know, so I used to sit and listen to whatever they were playing. And I now play that music at home because it makes me feel really, I get that comfort sort of thing. It makes
yes,
me, and it's really comfortable. And then sometimes, like, my elder daughter's got Alexa on, and there's something coming out of that, and I'm finding it's like a horn of, you know, a load of bees in my face. It's like offending me, and I have to stop myself from saying, what is this bullshit, switch it off,
yeah,
because it's like my body is going, no, this is not right, I don't like it. Then it was funny, because I was listening. Sometimes it's not like that. Like sometimes, I think recently she was playing, she was trying to do a TikTok dance, and she was listening to Justin Bieber on Alexa. And I was like, oh, actually, do you know what? I really like this song. And then I immediately now, what I'll do is on Spotify, just quickly find it and put it on a playlist. And so that on this playlist now, I've kind of got some really old stuff, but then I've also got the odd bit of things that I've heard her listening to. And my partner, he is a musician, and he's much better than me. He'll sit and engage with her. So he would say, what are you listening to? And he puts on a lot of interest, even though actually he is stuck in the sort of late 70s in terms of his music. You know, he's kind of, and I think that's partly, it's just being open to those experiences, because I think that's kind of what ages you. It's just that kind of like, I don't like this and I don't like that and I only eat this. And I can remember sort of, you know, it's kind of, I don't like modern art, I don't like any of the telly, you know, I think the clothes are all really weird these days. And you just, you get down this kind of, and then you're like, actually, what, isn't that sad? But also it means that you just become this big ball of kind of, you know, don't like. And I say it's the same with food. You know, when I go in a restaurant, I always want to eat the same thing. And then I just have to inside go, no, try and eat something else that you're not familiar with, if you can stand it. And it might go wrong, but at least you're tackling that sort of thing head on.
That's such good advice. I know, yeah, there's certain members of my family that I think have definitely got trapped into that. You know, same hairstyle, probably from when they were in their late 20s, early 30s, and they've trapped in that, which is fine. But it is, you know, it is work in progress, but it's so enlightening when you do pick a different starter in Wagamama's or something.
It's really funny because sometimes I'll get, because my, you know, you used to maybe have a really hedonistic lifestyle. I did, you know, I lived in Amsterdam in the, you know, in the early 90s. So I, you know, I feel like I was quite hedonistic, but now I'll be like, wow. Oh, I went to Wagamama's and I had the katsu curry, or, you know, and sometimes I'll try and make, like last week I tried to make a katsu curry and everyone was just horrified. They were like, what is this? It's disgusting. And I was like, this is what young people eat in London. They eat katsu curry. So I'm just bringing you, this to you.
And they said, it's a big Japanese chicken nugget. For God's sake, eat it.
I know. But I kind of like, I get really excited now because I don't have, you know, I don't really smoke and drink that much. So it's kind of like the fact that I've done something a bit innovative in the kitchen becomes my highlight of my day. You know, it's like, oh, we'd had something different for dinner. It's amazing.
I wanted to talk about, so we're just briefly, because like in your book, you talk about your fertility problems and stuff, which I'm sorry you had to go through that, but you don't talk about being an older mum. And so I sort of briefly wanted, if you can, I mean, it's like, I even feel rude saying that because I'm like, do you consider yourself an older mum? Like,
oh, no, okay, I mean, I think, that? No,
and what
I mean,
is an older mum?
I'm definitely an older mum. I don't know. I mean, even if, I think medically, if you're post 35, you're put in the geriatric mum. When I had Ray, I was 40, and I can remember going to all my antenatal appointments, and I remember that they gave me a brochure and it said morbidly obese geriatric mum. So I had like and that was probably on my third appointment or something. And I was like, oh, my God, you know, I'm morbidly.
Special sticker. You got the special sticker for your folder.
I know.
You do not find that they love to keep saying it. I with my second, because I was 41, 42, I can't remember. It was like, well, because you're an older mum, Mrs. Ashdown, this is going to happen. And da, 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 da. But then I would get some nice midwives that were like, there's no reason, just because, you know, you're healthy and your first one went fine, you can have this birth and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, some of them.
I think it's funny. I think it's changing a bit now, because I think even with Ray, I noticed that they were much more like cautious all the time and kept reminding me about how old I was. And then actually, even though with Greta, I was even older still, they didn't. They sort of, and I think my attitude had changed at that point because I'd already got one child. And so I had to kind of keep on going. I was doing lots of hotbed stuff and writing a book. And I was kind of, I actually felt younger with her, even though numerically I was older, because I just kind of, I was not quite as kind of, I think I was very neurotic the first time around. But in terms of being an older mum, I think, this is one of the things I think, again, we need to talk a bit more about, because I had never really considered what that would be like. All my fixation, like many women, was just on getting pregnant. So I was kind of like, I've got to get pregnant. I've got to have a baby. And I actually didn't realise that babies then turned into children. So I sort of had this fixation that, you know, I will have a baby and then I will go about my business in much the same way as I did before. And then I do write about it in the book, where I think I was in a supermarket and I looked down the children's aisle, which kind of had like baby stuff, weaning stuff, school uniform stuff, you know, educational toys. And I looked down there and I was like, what is this? And I was like, what is all this? And then I was like, oh my goodness, this childhood thing goes on for a long time. Yes, like, yeah. you know, it's not just a baby. You're going to have to bring this person up. And I felt this massive sense of overwhelm. But I think as an older mum, there's two things that happen. Physically, you're just ruined. I think you are knackered, and more women need to sort of, you know, acknowledge that physically it's pretty hardcore. But there are some benefits as well. So I think, you know, a lot of women, when they're older, they're made to feel that, you know, society's judging them, and, you know, maybe they were a bit selfish and they shouldn't have waited so long. But I think there's some things that I can bring some other stuff to parenting, which I couldn't bring. And part of that thing that I'm bringing is the fact that I've got better self-knowledge now. You know, I know myself better, know what I want to do. I'm probably a bit more honest, and I'm trying to be less of a people pleaser. And so it's not ideal, but what I want to move away from is kind of, I think women who have had kids in their 40s often feel a bit of guilt or a bit of kind of shame around it. And I think that's not right. You know, there's this horrible sort of thought that there's a stereotype basically for some women that you were too focused on your work. You know, that kind of like you wanted to have it all, you know, you wanted to have the good job. You wanted to, you know, you should have, it was a mistake. Like you should have tried to have children earlier. And it's funny because I've got younger sisters and they're in their early 30s. And I do say to them, I say, listen, it's completely up to you when you want to have kids. But one thing I will say is don't start trying to have kids when you're in your late 30s, like just in case, because I did go through fertility treatment. And I think there was a lot for me where I kept thinking, if I'd started earlier, if I'd tried to have children in my early 30s, would I have encountered so many problems? Because the problem is that, you know, aging does make it more difficult for you to get pregnant.
That yeah, definitely people in terms of trying for a baby just don't wait, I guess. But yeah, there are so many benefits. And but the guilt thing, that's an interesting one. I mean, I think there's the other, I always say to people that, I mean, I do get reluctant sometimes, but generally there's no kind of like, oh, I wish I was still out partying or anything like that. No. So there's no begrudgingness in that way. I think in the back of my mind, I always knew I was going to have them late. I don't know if, I mean, I know obviously you struggled, but I mean, did you think you wouldn't be like having them early 30s? Did you always think
that? I think, on reflection, and this is another thing I think that I talk about sort of in the book, is that you don't, when I was at school, all of the onus was on not getting pregnant. So it's kind of like, this is the contraception you need to use. You know, that you always have a condom. And so I was on the pill, and then it was, you know, I was very focused on my work, and the work wasn't really compatible. There wasn't a lot of role models that I felt that I could relate to who had children.
True, yes.
So I just kept on going. And then I guess I've noticed now that younger women, I think sort of millennial women, seem, I don't know what the stats are. I know the age of motherhood's going up, but I feel like I'm hearing and seeing more women who are sort of having kids in their 30s again now.
Well, exactly. You
know? And I'm sort of like, listen, there's no right or wrong way to kind of do it. But I think I almost really didn't have them, you know. I could have been a very different story. You know, I had miscarriages and there was nothing actually wrong. I think it was just the fact that it was news to me in a way that somebody had, you know, I can remember going for my first appointment and them just saying, well, your eggs are really old, you know. And then when I had my first round of IVF, they harvested 16 eggs. And I said, that's brilliant, 16 eggs. But I think only 3 of those fertilized, which is quite common, I think. And it was just the knowledge. So I wish someone at school had said to me, listen, this not getting pregnant business is, you know, that's important. But also let's remember that you also want to think about your fertility as well. So I don't mean in kind of scaring women, but just saying, listen, you know, your fertility does decline a little bit. So just when you're, a lot of our life is unplanned, but I just think I literally felt like this was a bit of information that even though the Daily Mail had been sort of saying it daily in their horrible news reports, I'd kind of been in denial about the biology, you know, the actual. And I think women are like, you know, we're not prepared for the menopause, and then suddenly the menopause comes, and it's having the information at hand. You know, I'd like to know in advance a little bit, like, this might happen.
I think you said in the book about, you know, it'd be good if they did it in sex education at school, rather than just talking about the periods and that's it, just talk about more about the evolution that women have to go through, and would have been fantastic. But I think, I guess I was quite, if I don't know if the word's lucky in that way, because my mum had me late, I think I'm quite a good role model. I think, like, even though she was quite old fashioned in her way, so she was like an old, whatever the stereotypical old mum might be, in the sense that people did think she was my nan at times, but that was because she was very old fashioned in how she dressed, and she had a very old fashioned way. But I think she was just one of those souls, like, even when she was in her 20s, I think that she was quite old fashioned. So I guess that's why I thought, well, if I'm just partying or I'm doing my gigs or whatever, it's fine. I can just have them late like mum did. You know, that was fine. But,
No, and that's the thing. I think I like that, though. I like the fact that you can see the positives in it. And I think generally, I mean, that's the thing, is that you're kind of judged whatever happens. You're judged if you have them too young. You're judged if you have them what's deemed as too old, you know. And actually, I say, like, you can be a, you know, you could be a good mother whatever age you are, or, you know, let's not say good, let's say a kind of imperfect, you know, trying to be your best mum. And, you know, I could have been a mother at 30. Would I have been better or not? I don't know. You know, I don't think
I would have been. No. I can tell you now. I probably
would have still been stuck in the slug and lettuce smoking. You know, that would have been you know, it was all the slug and lettuce and going to Camden and trying to meet Jarvis Cocker. That was on my agenda back in the day.
Oh, those are the days. Yeah, I remember the Good Mixer. Is that in Camden?
I went to the Good Mixer too late. So I went sort of the year after sort of Britplop. Britplop. When Britplop.
That's where you were going wrong, Anneke. You were like, where's the Britplop?
Where's the Britplop? And I kept trying to, I felt like whenever I sort of arrived at the Good Mixer, all of the people who were in the Good Mixer were looking for Damon Albarn, or they were, you know, but the actual original people were not there. I did see Pete Doherty, I think, a couple of times. I saw Amy Winehouse a few times in
Yeah, Canada, so did I. Never, yeah.
I never ever saw, you know, the real Britplop.
Well, I was sort of too young sort of to be going out to the pub at those days. So I came along, little bit later on. So then I'm going to the Good Mix, and it was people like Menswear. Do you remember a band called Menswear?
Yeah
I snogged one of them, but that's another story. No one knows Menswear. And he was horrible, actually. Anyway, we're going to wrap up. And we always ask if we could give you a night off without the kids. You could go absolutely anywhere with anyone you like, and eat what you like, dance, sing, whatever. Where would you go and what would you do?
It's funny. I was thinking I'd love to go to like a really posh restaurant. Like I was just saying this recently, that I've not been really to restaurants at all. Obviously none of us have. But I'd like to go somewhere that's sort of, I can't even think of a name of one because I've not been for so long, but somewhere where the budget wasn't really, you know, you could actually have whatever you wanted from the menu. I'd like to be on a terrace somewhere. I'd like it to be sunny. I'd have a couple of glasses of something, maybe very good quality champagne. And I might even have a Vogue menthol if I could have one.
A Vogue menthol.
And then I think it would probably be with my partner, but we would just have to say, we weren't going to talk about children, and we're going to talk about something else. And maybe actually what I'd love to do is maybe see a band. You know, I'd love to go and see. I went to go and see Queens of the Stone Age the O2 is the one, isn't it, in Greenwich?
Yeah.
Went to see them. And that was quite funny because I had this, it's the expectation versus reality. So I was expecting that I was going to be right at the front and it was going to be like it used to be, and I'd be throwing myself forwards and moshing around. And instead, we had these seats where we were really high up, in the rafters of the building, and I got vertigo. Oh, no. And I couldn't, I had almost like a panic attack. I had to hold on to the side of my chair so much that by the end of it, there were sort of nail marks in the chair. And I thought, this is the problem with kind of, I expected it to be one thing and it turned out to be another. But yeah, I think a posh meal and going to see a band.
With your partner.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds good. I think it's funny that these questions now post pandemic are a lot smaller. I think before we used to get, and I will ride there on a unicorn and I will do.
I know. Now it's just like, I just want to go out somewhere.
Annika, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, where can we find you on social media? What you got going on? What do we need to buy?
I'll be at Annika Somerville. So on Instagram, it's quite easy to find me. And then my book is How to Be a Boss at Aging. I've put it up here. Oh, no, it's over there. Very unsubtle. If I was on video, you could see that I've got it there. And then basically, I'm just writing a book about work, which is going to be coming out next year. And yeah, I guess in terms of sort of next plans, I'm just planning to carry on writing, really, and podcasting. So I'll do a new series of my podcast later in the year as well.
What's the podcast called?
It's called How to Be a Boss at Aging. And so basically I just talk each week to a different person, usually somebody in their sort of 40s and 50s. And it might be about menopause, or sometimes we talk about infertility or lots of things that sort of come to a head when you reach your 40s. And so I'm going to carry on doing that, really, because it's just what I'm interested in. So it's kind of like a joy to me to do it.
Great. Okay, well, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us.
You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast with me, Hattie Ashdown. Thank you to my panel and guests today. Edited and produced by Scott Kingsnorth in association with Screaming of Laughter, the lunchtime comedy club where babies can come too. These shows go out live on Soho Radio for The Other Woman Show. See schedule for details. Please subscribe, rate and review and share this podcast. We really appreciate it, and it's the only way more people can find us. So see you next time for more Mum and Tonic.